Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for, even if the government can't make their mind up. Anyway, we are this week joined by the amazing Jamie Sands, and you'll see why he's amazing in a minute. Welcome, Jamie.
An absolute pleasure, guys. You know, some of my favourite people in the world have been on this podcast, so an absolute honour to join that roster, yeah?
I thought he was going to say, some of my favourite people run this podcast, but no, have been on it. There we go. Okay, well, we'll try and make you our favourite by the end, make us your favourite by the end of this. But I'm joined by one of my favourites, and that is the lovely JC, John Curtis. How are you, mate?
Oh, you sweetheart. Do you know, I didn't know Jamie until a few weeks ago, and we met at a conference. And yeah, I thought, wow, this guy is absolutely full of knowledge and passion. But there's more to him, and I want an opportunity just to scratch the surface a bit and see what makes him tick, because he stands alone, stands out in a crowd, and you just think, he's special.
Well, and we're going to find out just how special as we go along today. But Jamie, start us off with the mundane stuff. And actually, it's not mundane at all. What is your day job? Who do you work for? And what do you do? And what's your mission in life? Just in a nutshell, the lift speech for Jamie Sands.
Give you the pitch. I'll try and be concise. So, yeah, hi, I'm Jamie. I'm head of solutions for Welsh Group, and that in itself is quite unique. It's not a role that really exists in most hauliers. And yeah, we're a transport provider from the east of England. Technically an SME, 70 trucks, a couple of warehouses. Been around for 92 years, so huge amount of heritage. Still family owned and operated. I look after technology, innovation, and sustainability for the group. That mostly looks like government-run, grant-funded projects. So we're a member of EFRATE 2030, one of the zero-emission HGV infrastructure demonstrator consortiums.
Well done.
But also also engage with, you know, various organisations in that space, Connected Places Catapult, the Alan Turing Institute. So, yeah, really just trying to push the boundaries of what a regional independent operator looks like. I wear another hat as well. So we've recently launched a research and innovation platform called 2040. It's a not-for-profit, so mission-led, trying to accelerate the transition, not just to zero-emission vehicles, but to the future of freight for operators.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. What a list. And so you can see
there's a lot going on.
Why I am saying this is interesting. John, this is exciting, isn't it?
It is, but I can't get past, you know, head of solutions for a logistics company. Surely this is the world's simplest job. You stick stuff in a lorry, you send it to a site, you deliver it, and then you get another load and you go somewhere else. Yet, no. For Welshes, it's so, so much more. Why do you bother, Jamie? Why don't Welshes just sit back and say, do you know what? We've got trucks. We're delivering stuff. We're doing well. We've been going for 96 years. It ain't broke. Don't fix it.
Well, it's that heritage piece that's really, really important, yeah? So it gives you a different outlook on what your goals are. So it's not just about making a load of money in Q3. Yeah, we'd love to make a load of money in Q3, but the imperative is that we keep this company going for another 100 years and that the next generation of Welshes can take over. And to do that, you've got to be a little bit more forward-thinking. You've got to be on top of what's coming. So that's kind of where this role came from. I started operationally. So, you know, on the phones, talking to drivers, putting pallets on trucks and telling them where to go. My interest in like processes and workflows and technologies whilst I was doing that job made me hunt for efficiency. How can we do this better? I often joke that it's about laziness. Yeah. I want to do things as easily as possible so I don't have to work too hard. My boss, Chris, kind of noticed the work that I was doing in that and thought that I could be valuable at a kind of group level. So looking after that sort of stuff for the wider group. And yeah, people call it digital transformation. Yeah, making sure we've got the best systems, making sure they're talking to each other. And that all led into zero emission vehicles and then AI and autonomous vehicles. And yeah, it's all about efficiency. It's a low margin industry. So those little marginal gains become really, really important.
That was exactly where I was going, because there's not a lot of margin in it. There's not a lot of additional revenue that you can find by investing hugely in the technologies. And as an early adopter, you are having to pay a premium to be at the front of the queue when it comes to getting new kit, getting new systems, investing in your infrastructure. How is that funded? You mentioned government programs, but it's not just government programs. You're digging into the family pot, aren't you, to pay for a lot of the kit yourselves?
To a certain extent, yeah. For us, it's super collaborative. So working with partners, working with different organisations to try and de-risk that a little bit. So yeah, the grant funding is great. That enables us to do a lot of stuff that we wouldn't usually be able to do. But where we've really found a lot of gains is becoming a bit of a test bed. So if we're working with a new startup, an innovator, someone's got a great idea, if we can help them by giving them industry knowledge, giving them a truck to put a sensor on or a route that they can optimize, then you've suddenly got this like a preferential commercial terms when it does turn to commercialization, and it gives you a chance to stress test these things without having to put your money where your mouth is.
And I think, but that's really important too. And we're going to go to Papa Welsh. I don't know Chris's dad's first name, but I know what I do know is that he's an accountant by trade. He's a finance director. And John, we know that finance directors don't like to spend money. So I think this is where Jamie, you and Chris have really kind of hit on something, because You've been able to really step forward and say, listen, we're willing. Obviously, we need some cash. Let's take that government cash and we'll be the leaders and we'll be the innovators. Is that how it's happened? Has that been the strength of it? And how do you see that moving forward? You know, continue with the collaboration, get those competitive commercial terms, or what else do you see in the future?
Yeah, and it's paying off, and it's paying off in ways that we didn't necessarily expect. People talk a lot about the green premium, so, you know, charging people more for a sustainable transport solution, and that basically doesn't exist. But what we have found recently is that we're winning tenders because of the work that we're doing, because of the profile that we've got now that didn't necessarily exist before, and winning tenders against, you know, big multinationals as well, and not on price. I think it's mostly because a lot of these organizations understand the direction of travel, and they know that having a partner in that space that they don't have to hold the hand of as they go on that journey. So when new customer says to us, oh, we're going to need to start reporting on our scope 3 emissions, we're just, yeah, okay, we can do that. We don't have to ask them what a scope 3 emission is here. And that's really, really important.
And I like that, because what I'm seeing as with Welsh is, so for context, everybody, that my house is merely a couple of miles from one of your key depots here in Bedford. And I've been to the Duxford site and seen the plans for the future. And obviously those plans are in play right at this point, with big charging depots going in, with lots of energy going to be available. And it's that collaborative approach that's allowing you to diversify, not only in like this knowledge sharing, improving of winning your core business, but also now beginning to think about consultancy, charging and energy and other things. Talk to us about that diversification that builds up the revenue pot, which will keep Papa Welsh really happy.
I mean, it's always been part of the business. So people know us for the big blue trucks. But we've got e-commerce divisions, we do specialist movements, abnormal loads, yeah. We block up motorways with escort vehicles because we've got great big kit on the back. Yeah, we've got cranes, we operate our own truck and van centre. So the theory has always been, you know, if we've got this full range of logistics services, then, you know, partly it makes the customers really sticky, and it allows you to be able to service all of their needs all in one place. And that's important to customers. So when we start to look to the future and what new services might look like, they mostly revolve around energy. So that becomes part of that logistics ecosystem, you know, whether it's charging, whether it's data, all of those things are going to be really, really important parts.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
One of the things which Welsh's is known for is the journey. And I'm interested in your journey particularly. How on earth did you get into this role? Have you always been in logistics?
No, not at all. Very few people go to school and decide they want to be in logistics.
Or vans.
And that's an issue. Yeah, that's an issue. It always seems to be something. Anyone you speak to, they fell into it and they ended up staying because they loved it. If I could sort of go back and talk to my younger self, then I think I could probably convince that guy that logistics is the right thing, because looking back, it makes a lot of sense, my skill set. But yeah, I don't know how far back you want to go, but I didn't really enjoy school. So when I left school, I ended up I went to college for a little while and I did music technology. Music was my first love, you know, still is a huge part of my life, a real passion. So, you know, did a bit of DJing, did some production. We used to throw some parties. It was great fun. I worked in a record shop for like the first 10 years of my career. And that kind of defaulted me on this kind of retail pathway. So retail management. As you know, that's not a particularly secure industry to work in, especially nowadays. So it kind of reached a point where I was like, well, is this... I got made redundant once. And thought, you know, I might need to find a new sector to work in. So where does my skills fit? I came up with logistics and event management, which is basically just the same thing. Yeah, it's moving people around. It's putting those processes in place so everything runs smoothly. And I had two job offers, basically. And it was Chris that interviewed me at Welsh Group. And I was really impressed with his vision. He was just on the verge of taking over from his dad. And he had all these big plans. He talked about his vision for the company. And I think I really, really bought into that. So started at Welsh Group, like I say, at the ground floor. Operations supervisor I was. And the journey started from there. And, you know, after that point, I basically started making up my own jobs to move into, because it wasn't a thing that really existed. So we went into a role that we called operational support. And that was all about taking jobs away from the people on the front line, working through them, making them more efficient, making them easier, or just eliminating them entirely, automating processes and then passing them back down. So, yeah, it's that digital transformation piece.
Now, you've mentioned processes twice in this interview so far. They're obviously important to you, and how you do things matters. Is it reasonable of me to say you're a bit of a nerd?
Yeah, that's very, very reasonable. Yeah, self-proclaimed. In all aspects of that word, yeah. So, yeah, a bit of a comic book geek, you know, movie nerd. I love those kind of ecosystems. So, yeah, definitely a massive nerd.
What are your passions outside of music and trucking? What are those passions? How do you nerd out? You know, tonight, Friday night, how will you nerd out typically?
Honestly, that's about it. Yeah, like I hyper focus on things. So if I've got a passion, that becomes everything. Music and cinema are the two big ones. So I'll probably be watching a movie when we've done. And I often think that they're not good examples of like hobbies or interests, because everyone likes music and films, don't they? But I think I really, really like them. They're like everything to me.
So, Jamie, so whenever I hear somebody that's truly like a film nerd, I want to know I'm not a film nerd as such, but I do have a sort of top five and all of that kind of stuff. And they often relate to who we are as people, and a quote that often kind of is real bedrock to us. So what's your favorite film? What's your favorite quote?
I've got a list of like my top 10 favorite films. There's 20 films on it at the moment, which says a lot. I guess recently, I'm a bit obsessed with the film Project Hail Mary. I don't know if anyone's seen that yet. No. Not long been out. Absolutely incredible with Ryan Gosling from the creators of the Spider-Verse movie. So, yeah, yeah. Phil Lord. Okay. And the quote from that is amaze, amaze, amaze. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, I don't know anything about the Hail Mary bit, but that amaze, 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 that's... You know, that is super cool, isn't it? Because that's what we want to do. And this, and I think this journey is all about people being amazed. And as you look at the horizon, and you are a man very focused on the horizon, and we've just been to China. I know you and I have talked a little bit about what you see as the future. And we were at MOVE together just for, you know, just a few hours we crossed over. What do you see that is amaze, amaze, amaze in the sector that we love and operate in?
Oh, he's good, you know, isn't he? He should have his own radio show. He, that link, beautiful, beautiful.
He's done this before. there's a couple of things that really, really interest me, and they're kind of interrelated. One of them is the idea of system-level thinking across a network. So... it comes back to that piece about efficiency and how important efficiency is in logistics. And at the moment, that efficiency is capped by the fact that a lot of these operators are siloed. And it's the reason that the big multinationals, you know, the big 3PLs have such an advantage, because they have this scale to them. So think a lot about how we can leverage those networks of partners across the country and different modes and different ways of moving stuff about, and put a kind of level of kind of orchestration over the top of them. It almost turns it into a computer game, yeah? And that's the nerdy piece coming along. Yeah, me and Chris often joke that we might go away and we'll play what we call work simulators. And they're just like our job, except everyone does what they're told. But it's almost a bit of a God complex, yeah, being able to move the pieces around and put things where you want and make things work. And that also applies to like energy networks. So we talk a lot about how this transition to zero emission isn't a vehicle issue, it's an energy issue. Yeah, it's about energy and infrastructure. And those same things apply. So really interested at the moment about kind of what the energy markets look like for an independent operator. So how can our participation in those markets also help us put more infrastructure in the ground, but also bring in more revenue streams when you talk about like demand response and energy arbitrage and all those things. And it all leads to this idea of automation, yeah? And in the vehicle sense, you know, that's autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles, but like in a warehousing sense, you know, it could be robotics. In a system sense, you start talking about AI and automation in that sense, and all that stuff is going to have such an impact on our industry. Yeah, it will become absolutely foundational to how this works. And that's one of the big drivers for doing what we do is, yeah, can we be in front of that, and can we start to define what that looks like for an independent operator?
And this is the fantastic thing. You're not thinking define it for Welsh Group, you're defining it for a sector. And that, mm-hmm. I love that ambition. But I first must pick you up on a small point that we have some rules. 3PL. Now, some people won't know what a 3PL is. So just give them that, but then you can follow it up with autonomy. That gets rid of jobs, doesn't it? Isn't that going to be a negative thing? So 3PL and then the autonomy question.
Third-party logistics, so a company taking ownership of the supply chain of a customer, usually a shipper or a retailer or a manufacturer. I often use that term generally to describe all of those big multinational companies that usually have three letters in their name and they kind of just eat each other. What they do is very, very different to what we do, and it's kind of a 50-50 split. On one side, you've got like a dozen big mega fleets and 3PLs, and then on the other side you've got like tens of thousands of independent companies. And the stuff that interests me is on our side of things. Yeah, those guys can do what they want. They've got departments that can look at this stuff. They don't need any help. Yeah, they're on their own. So yeah, all my interest is on that other side of it. I can't remember what the second question was. Autonomy. What was the second part to that?
Autonomy.
Take
our jobs, and it's gonna ruin industry, and we're all gonna be pouring out on the street, and robots are gonna be running around doing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a long journey, and society, to be quite sort of big and bold about it, things have always changed, and we adapt. So I'm confident that we will adapt in a kind of micro scale. When you talk about autonomous vehicles and drivers, there's a couple of things that are worth mentioning. Is that actually there's a huge driver shortage. Yeah, people don't want to do it. We're expending massive amounts of effort, time and money into bringing more people into this industry. I can't see anyone directly losing their jobs. What will happen is they'll start to age out, and we'll just not have to put as much time and effort into recruiting people. And that's a good thing. The places where autonomous trucking really, really works well now actually quite cleanly lines up with the sort of work that's quite difficult to recruit for. So hub-to-hub shuttle runs, you know, those monotonous nighttime routes, moving backwards and forwards over short distances between two locations. Yeah, they're some of the highest paid jobs in the industry, and actually they're some of the easiest to automate as well. It's about finding the balance, yeah?
Yeah.
No, nobody wants anyone to lose a job. And actually at Welsh Group, we've got a policy, like a written policy in place, is that if you can automate your job to a certain extent, then we will allow you to work less hours. And we've also had a history of like moving people between jobs within the business. So we have a lot of drivers moving to warehouse moving to drivers moving into the office. It's quite a lot of scope to move people around and create new roles for them. Yeah, that's what happened with me. I was in operation, and we made a new job. Yeah.
It is a great place to be. Jamie, you strike me as somebody who's hugely intelligent, highly articulate, yet you seem to remain very calm as a human being. Is there stuff in your day-to-day world that gets you a bit ratty and gets you grumpy? Because it doesn't
come across.
Really.
I am famous for being like incredibly chill, almost to a fault. My partner gets quite annoyed at me sometimes because she wishes I would react a little bit more sometimes. Yeah, very much go with the flow. You have to be in this industry. So the people that thrive in this industry are like that, because it's chaos. Yeah, it's absolute chaos all the time. And it still amazes me that any of it works, and it does, and it seems to work every single time, and it's incredible. And part of that is because the people who are coordinating this stuff are the type of people that let this flow over you a little bit.
Mm. Do you put that nature down to an individual, an influence, somebody in your upbringing? Who's been influential for you?
Well, my parents are both like that. Yeah, my dad is incredibly calm. It wasn't a hectic, fraught sort of household when we was growing up. So yeah, I think it's mostly genetic.
and a positive thing, because you know, in that chaotic world that you habit, or you find that anger, frustration doesn't get you any faster down the road, doesn't get the product delivered, and you just end up burning up huge amounts of energy. And I suppose that brings me to efficiency. It's inefficient. Again, it's that nerdy thing that you talk about. I don't like inefficiency. I want to find the best way of doing things. Are you constantly on the lookout for new techniques, new ways, learning lessons from other industries, people that you didn't expect? Are you a hungry learner?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes I'd even say I'd go too far with it. Yeah. So I might spend hours automating a process that might only take me 10 seconds to do manually. And when you do the maths, you might actually spend longer fixing it than you would just doing the job in the first place. Yeah. But yeah, the learnings from other industries is really, really important in our world. We talk about de-risking the transition and being able to innovate. So being able to pick stuff up that's worked in other industries and kind of transplant that into freight is a big part of what I do. So we spend a lot of time talking to people from bus and from LCV, but also, you know, as wide ranging as, you know, like construction and manufacturing industries, you know, tools that they're using. How can we use that I went to a conference earlier this year. Bridge AI are incredible. They're dedicated to accelerating the uptake of artificial intelligence in industries that wouldn't normally be able to invest in it, and they've got a particular focus on kind of construction, agriculture, and transport. So the idea is that, you know, if you're in finance or something and you need an AI agent to do a thing, yeah, you just give someone a load of money and they'll do it for you. We can't do that, so how do you help them? And I was wandering around this hall and I caught myself doing it. As I was approaching people, I was looking at their banner, and they would say something like predictive maintenance in buses, and I was like, well, you could do that in trucks, yeah. And every single one I went to, I was like, can you reframe that to work in my world? And most of the time, you can. You know, these foundational technologies they're agnostic, yeah. They work in anything.
And I think that was what we discovered when we were out in China, John, wasn't it? Because we went out there. I was very excited to see a load of new electric vans and with all the technology. And, of course, there wasn't very many there. What was interesting was there were some autonomous commercial vehicles, you know, a large number, you know, a variety of weights and sizes and all that sort of stuff, technology that is already in operation in China, but also across couple of hundred cities across the world, you know, so it isn't just limited to China. But when we looked at the cars, what we saw was autonomy coming through in floods, you know, like different levels of autonomy. And I think the you know, imagine getting on the motorway in Edinburgh and just thinking, all right, I've got to go to London. I'm just going to pop the autonomous thing on and I can be at level 4. I know I need to be with the vehicle, but I can pretty much just chill out and do that long journey and then just, you know, pull off to charge or whatever, you know, at an appropriate time. And particularly with the world of trucks, we're talking 800 kilometers. Yes.
Let me just stop you there. Okay. Just a small point. L4. There may be people out there who don't know what L4 is. Could you just explain that for us?
Wow. So, John, you can explain it better, I know. However, so the different levels. So I think I'm right in saying that L3 means that you need to be in the vehicle ready to take over at any given moment, because the vehicle can just go, I don't like it anymore. And you have to grab the steering wheel and away you go. So you have to pay attention and the vehicle is monitoring you. L4 means... I can send an email or do whatever, you know, you don't have to hand your hands on and the vehicle will steer itself and it will take full control. I think there is a step beyond that, which I think is fully autonomous, which means that you don't even have to be in the seat at the front. I'm not sure. There's a little bit of a gray area.
The difference between level 4 and what they're starting to call level 5 is that level 4 is about a defined domain. So in bus and truck, you would set a route and it can be fully autonomous within that route. Level 5 is that kind of future where they're just free roaming, that you don't need that definition, that you can just send them anywhere you want and they'll figure it out.
Brilliant. I'm glad we had a genius
effectively
along to help
theoretical,
us.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But so, I mean, to come back to my point, if I can remember it, in China, it's always tricky, you know, squirrel... Anyway, we're back. But what we saw in China was a load of technology, particularly autonomy, but also a lot of other stuff, you know, visual interfaces, you know, driver interfaces, things like that, that made a heck of a lot of sense, perfectly in the car world, you know, from a leisure point of view. But if you translated that into van, truck, bus, whatever, it makes a whole stack of sense there. And it kind of feels that the world is learning constantly and we've got to be kind of taking technology and adapting it. Is there anything that's really come out from that journey that you've been on that you think, yeah, do you know what? That's the best example that we've had so far.
The energy piece is definitely the one. So we talk a lot with First Bus, First Group, First Charge now, and what they've been doing with electrifying their depots and the way they're tackling grid constraints, smart charging, the spatial stuff, like how you put that many vehicles in the space and still get charges to them. That's a huge inspiration for what a haulage depot of the future is going to look like. And I'm quite happy for them to make all the mistakes so that we can learn from them. Yeah, that's definitely the way it should work.
It's fantastic. But I love how you share this whole journey. And I think it's worth touching on your, I think, I can't remember if his consultancy is called 12 Pillars, but the program is definitely called 12 Pillars.
Shall I do the whole blurb? Shall I tell you all about it?
Yeah, do the blurb on that, because there's that and then the commitment to social media to share your journey, which is excellent stuff on LinkedIn. LinkedIn and everybody,
it's all part of the same. So 2040 is a not-for-profit that's dedicated to accelerating the transition to the future of freight for independent operators. We do three core things at the moment. The first of that is what we call collaborative innovation. So we're in these forums, we're talking to Connected Places Catapult, we're applying for grants, we're doing research and innovation. Yeah. Other operators don't have the bandwidth to do that because they're busy doing the job. So what we're going to do is collect data from these operators, collect challenges, collect use cases, and do the same thing that we're already doing, but with a much wider remit. We can test stuff, we can figure stuff out, and then when it works, we can pass it down the chain. And we can say, look, we've validated this. We know it's got a return on investment. We know that it does what we need it to do. Now you get kind of first dibs on using it in anger, and you can drive efficiency in your operation. Alongside that, we have a bit of a media platform. So, you know, huge inspiration for what you guys have done with EV Cafe. It's really important to talk about this stuff. I'm often accused of being overly optimistic. The reason I'm overly optimistic is because I'm surrounded by it. I'm seeing all these amazing people doing all these incredible things. Yeah, it's hard not to be optimistic when you see the rate of change that's happening. So what we want to do is share those stories and really throw a spotlight on all the incredible people that are doing this great stuff. And then there's the policy side of it, which I wasn't expecting to take off as much as it did. And honestly, I don't have a huge interest in it. But I intellectually understand how important it is to get those things right. So we have a framework, if you like, called 12 Pillars of Change. The 12 pillars are the 12 parts of the industry that need to collaborate better to get this transition moving. We did a big event last year where we pulled in absolute pillars of the industry, you know, Tim Campbell, Lorna McAteer, Logistics UK, Octopus were there, Neil Riddell from Power.
We didn't all of these get sectors an
that need to talk to each other to make this work. And during that session, we essentially mapped out what the roadmap might look like and what the barriers were to get there. And now this year we're running a series of workshops specifically on each of those barriers, but with that same concept, get all the smart people in a room together and really hash it out and stress test these ideas. And that should give us real clear actions on what needs to happen and what we need to do.
On the news this morning, we were talking about hydrogen as a fuel. And you know, there are so many different options that logistics operators have. And I wonder, you are clearly very knowledgeable about where we're going and how we're going to get there in terms of decarbonisation. What part, if any, does hydrogen play in your world?
I've been very outspoken about this for a number of years, almost to the point where I've stopped bothering. It plays no part in road transport. At least not in this country. There might be some real niche use cases somewhere. It doesn't make commercial sense. There is no way to get hydrogen in any form on parity for diesel, let alone below it. It's going to be electric everything. It's just about that roadmap. It's about how long it's going to take. And that timing piece is kind of the big unknown. We kind of know where we are and we know where we get to. We don't know how long it's going to take and we don't know when different players are going to move. And that's where the idea of like a transition fuel might come in. Yeah, whether you're going to use a biogas or a HVO or something like that. In my humble opinion, I think we're too close to that end game for it to be worth investing in other technologies. And I think I'd go a step further and say that actually this idea of technology neutrality, of not picking winners, can become dangerous because people see a silver bullet and they think, look, I'm not gonna bother electrifying my depot because hydrogen's gonna come along and save us all. So I'll just wait for that to happen. And if it doesn't, then we're gonna come unstuck because we're gonna hit a cliff edge. Especially with the 2035, 2040 end of sale dates for diesel vehicles. Even if they move that back 5-10 years, yeah, the same thing's gonna happen, yeah. Our industry especially will wait. We'll wait till last minute. Most of the industry will. And then they'll make their choice. Because going down a dead end could be really damaging to the business. Whenever I hear people talking about these things, I do really worry that we're kind of giving people an excuse not to investigate what most people see to be the obvious solution.
How have you coped as a business? Obviously, you'll have minimized the impact, but with the recent troubles in Iran and the Straits of Hormuz and getting fuel, how has that impacted the wider logistics sector? Because I get the sense that price volatility eats into your margins. Your margins are slim anyway. That's enough to push operators over the edge. Surely part of the whole resilience piece is about moving to electric, because you are then more in control of your destiny. We can use renewables, we can battery store the energy that we generate, and then we have a resilience in our operation. That has to be the right way, surely.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're preaching to the converted, and it's something we talk about a lot. We've gone so far as we don't talk about decarbonisation anymore. I tend not to talk about the climate anymore. And I focus on those things, commerciality and resilience, the two levers. And if it doesn't work without those, you know, it doesn't work. Most savvy operators weathered the fuel increases fairly well. It complicates things. Mm. But we operate a fuel escalator. So if fuel goes up and down, then it gets passed on to the customers.
Mm. Which is fair, right?
Yeah. And people get it. But you do get pushback. You know, a big customer suddenly sees that spike and, you know, there's a conversation to be had. So, yeah, it's not nothing. and it takes some... It helps when it's on the news, yeah?
Yeah.
When everyone can see it.
You know what they say.
They understand.
Yeah. That.
And we saw the same during COVID with the driver shortage. You know, we all of a sudden, you know, it was in everyone's faces. They understood what we was going through. So when we went back to the customers and said, look, we might need to put your rates up because everything's expensive right now. It's definitely an easier rates conversation than you would usually have when it's right up in front of people.
And Jamie, you touched on commerciality and resilience, and it's something that I think rings true. We spoke about it this morning a little bit in the news when, you know, we hear the uncertainty and the sort of dilly-dallying that government do. They can't seem to, you know, organize themselves. And so we need clarity, we need focus, and we're not getting it. That resilience and commerciality really is the key argument, isn't it, to really focus people in? Because actually, it's better for business, as in it's more cost effective. And I know that the cost of trucks has been a little bit of a challenge, but with the grants recently, certainly the end of last year and into this financial year as well, we've seen some significant reductions in the total cost of ownership, and so suddenly that, and then when you factor in renewables and you factor in other things, suddenly the commercial argument is really, really strong. And resilience, both from a driver point of view, in the sense that the drivers have a better time, but also like the energy is much more controllable and all that sort of stuff. That has to be the key message across all these platforms, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the challenge we face is that you're introducing complexity. Yeah, so a lot of these operators, they've always done what they've always done. You know, it's basically been the same for 100 years, and we're turning on its head, and we're introducing all these new concepts and new language, new acronyms that they need to learn, and it's hard. Yeah, and the reason that we've kind of got on top of it is because we've dedicated someone to researching it and figuring it all out. What we really need to focus on is how do we now reduce that complexity so that those that follow don't need to figure it out and don't need to spend all these years trying to think about it. And we do that with some of these amazing new digital solutions that we have. So when you've got energy management built into your core systems, you don't need to think about it. When you've got smart scheduling that's accounting for range and payload and all these factors that you need to consider when you're planning this work, it should become easy so that the people can really focus on what they're really, really good at doing. Yeah.
And that's what I've loved about this conversation, that it is really focused on coming up with solutions that make life easier for people. One of the things that we often dive into, Jamie, is that people are formed by the events in their lives. And what we've got before us today is this well-rounded, seemingly solid and secure, knowledgeable, insightful, influential person that is really making a difference. And that is unequivocal, right? It's not always been the case. And there will have been dark days along the journey. And I do love for people to understand, you know, what it takes to sort of go through those dark days and deal with your own dramas and yet still come out on top. What dramas have you experienced in your life that have caused you to dig deep? And how did you get to the place where you could come out on top and be the man that we've got with us today?
I guess it took me a really long time to find myself. Never really had much direction and was just flitting from thing to thing, and this interests me, I'll go do that for a little while, but never had like a long-term outlook of, you know, this is what I'm doing and I want to keep on doing that. Quite late in my life. I mean, I've been doing what I'm doing now for 7 years, so up until that point, no real proper direction, and that has an impact on you. I guess the key thing that kind of changed things for me was kind of moving away from my hometown, and not long after that I found out that one of my best friends from when I was young committed suicide, ended his own life, and that hit me really, really hard. And we hadn't been that close towards the end of that. And there was kind of an amount of guilt involved in that as well, you know? So that kind of switched something in my brain and made me think, actually, let's try and do something, like, important. Let's try and, make a difference somewhere.
Mm.
That makes sense?
Mm, totally.
Completely dial into that make a difference, because how has that changed you? Because what you're doing right now is making a difference, both within Welch's Group, but in that this whole societal change. What does that give you, that sense of satisfaction or whatever it is? What is it? What does it give you, that making a difference?
I think it just satisfies my ADHD brain a little bit. You know what I mean? We spoke about this briefly before we started. Satisfaction is exactly the right word. Yeah, the things that you're doing are actually making a difference in as wide a sense as you can make it. It's incredibly satisfying.
Beautiful, Jamie. I don't take a great deal of joy from achieving things. I see a task, I go and do the task, and then I move on and say, what's next? And I continually battle to be better at things that I do, but not celebrate my wins. Do you celebrate your wins? And what does success look like for you? How will you know when you've actually really won?
You never really win, do you? Because there's always a new thing. And you're right, I don't celebrate it hugely. I try and appreciate all the little wins, and doing this sort of stuff, it's all about those tiny little wins, those marginal gains. So a really good example was I was speaking on a panel at a Logistics UK conference just yesterday, and it was a bit of a tough room. There were fleet engineers. So they're probably a little, they're not quite as evangelical about some of these things as some of the people you might talk to at like a decarbonisation event. But even in a room like that, people come up to you afterwards and they ask you for your email and they say, look, can we ask you some questions? Can we talk about this? Maybe can we see what you're doing? Can you help us figure us out? And yeah, just giving out one email address or one business card at the end of an event like that is that's a win. Yeah. And it will take a long time to convert industry, taking one conference or one person at a time. But direction of travel is really, really important for me. It's about continuing that momentum and keep moving forward.
I love that, Jamie, because we for those that don't know, we're selling a few electric vans with electricvanman.com, shameless plug. But like yesterday was really funny because we've only just started. And we had our first inquiry come through about 8:30 in the morning to our hello app email address. And then by about lunchtime, we'd converted that, or it was the day before actually, that we'd converted that into a test drive for the following day. And the test drive went really well. And this was all handled by Jaden. And, you know, he's my son, he's 22 years old. He's just getting an understanding of this. But he took great pleasure in doing all of these little things. And there was little win, and then we sold the van. And it was like, wow. And then we've had a couple more inquiries today. And it's little things that you think, okay, but we've now sold one van to a gardener across the road, actually, got our email address off the side of the van. It works, people. Stick it on the side of your van or truck, whatever it is. And these little things, we get to celebrate. And Jamie, I think that's really critical. We don't have to wait for the big win, do we? We can celebrate as we go. So I think that's a really key takeaway that I'm going to lean into. But we have and this is your reward for being so open. And for joining us and for giving us real insight on so many things today. But we have a closing tradition on the EV Cafe podcast, which I'm sure you already know because you've listened to hundreds of the podcasts. However, Jamie Sands, we are presenting you with the EV Cafe magic wand. Yes, we are, with lightning bolt and everything. And it is coming across the airwaves to you right now. After, and there we go. He's got it. Jamie, you get one wonderful wish to use as you choose. What and how would you use that wish?
I think there's a lot of things that I do where I realise like decisions are being made without operators being involved. And it's a core part of the 12 pillars stuff is that a big part of this industry feels like it's being done to them, not with them. So if I had a wish, then I wish that the default was that operators were in those rooms, whether it's policy or innovation or research. Let's make sure that the people who it's affecting most are part of that decision making process and are helping to build it.
Perfect wish.
You just gotta have Jamie in a room, don't you? You just gotta have him in the room. I mean, it's like you're the Zen master. And you're kind of logistics Zen master who you're the font of all knowledge. You really have researched, understand, processed, and got to a place where you're just so at one with what you're doing. It's almost Buddhist, you know? Yeah, let's have an om. Jamie, it's been brilliant, hasn't it, Paul? It's superb.
Jamie, I will tell you that I have loved this conversation. And if you'd have said to me before we started this conversation that you've been 7 years in the industry, your knowledge and experience and ability to communicate the nuances and importance of this industry, you just wouldn't imagine that you could condense all that into 7 years of learning, starting.
Well, it's a superpower, isn't it? Being able to have a fresh pair of eyes and not be dragged into the we've always done it this way.
Yeah, tis a superpower.
You can ask questions. You can go, well, why are you doing that? Why are we doing this? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and your wish. So I think, and I'll not predict, cause Jeff Tomlinson is going to be on this podcast in the not too distant future. We've just got to get a day. And for those of you that don't know, he's the number one power player this year. I think Chris is number two this year, probably be number one this next year. Anyway, but Jeff, at the beginning of a talk in Wales, said to the room, right, who operates trucks? That was his first question before he went in to speak. And there was one operator. And he stopped short of saying, shame on you, room. You know, as in, shame on you people for not getting enough operators in. But he very clearly gave us the challenge. More operators need to be in the room and in the conversation. That's what I've loved about what Welch's and you and Chris are doing. You integrate into your community fabulous there. We haven't really touched on the work of Welch's just broadly. And I think, you know, for anybody taking a moment to research great operators, you need to look at Welch Group because they do so much in the local community, Cambridgeshire and Bedfordshire and all of that good stuff. Lots of local awards and lots of local involvement, but also doing something that is driving societal change in a critical industry and understanding it like I've not seen any independent operator do, or really any of the 3PLs. There we go. We remember that from earlier. I'm not. There is.
Go listen to Chris's podcast. He would have talked about that stuff, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he probably did. But there, and I will say just that I am aware of one, certainly one 3PL that is doing quite a lot of work in this space. And Jamie, you probably know which one. But there's some great stuff going on. But Jamie, thank you for coming and sharing your view and vision of this sector. Has been an absolute joy. Connect with Welch's across their different social media sites. I know you've got LinkedIn. I know that you've probably got YouTube, maybe Facebook. Anyway, all the links will be in the commentary. Connect with Jamie. His social media on LinkedIn in particular is absolute genius. Some brilliant, brilliant posts that really, really are insightful. And it's a great place. Jamie, any last thoughts?
Just an absolute pleasure to be in this community. Yeah, watching it evolve from kind of cars to vans and now trucks are getting involved. There's a real sense of like camaraderie with people who kind of want to do good stuff. And it's an absolute pleasure to be a part of it.
Fantastic. Well, that's us. JC, calling it a day, but it's been fabulous, hasn't it?
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Every single time, I was saying to my wife this morning, we've done 170, 180 podcasts, and every single one is unique, just as unique as the people that come along and share their stories. And I never tire of hearing people's stories because you learn so much about life, not just about our industry. And it is that holistic thing that we're all working towards that you spoke about right at the beginning of the show. This is the future that we all hope for, but we can have it right now if we just work together. Brilliant stuff, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Really appreciate you. Do check out the 170, 80 podcasts. It'll take you a little while, but you'll get through them. Endure to the end. You can watch it on YouTube, or you can listen on your website or on all of the usual platforms. And do follow all of our YouTube, LinkedIn, and all that nonsense. Do it now. And we'll see you next time. Have a great day, everybody.